And welcome back to episode 44 of the Infamous Podcast. We are calling this one The 100, or Battlestar Babies If You're Nasty. This is your host, Brian, and normally it's Johnny with me, but today I have a special guest co-host because Johnny's off taking a mini golf tour on the Midwest of or the southwest part of Ohio, and with me today is
David Griffin. Wishing he could be golfing as well.
So Johnny is mini golfing.
Oh, mini golfing. So, okay.
Like, he was like, yeah, we're trying to hit as many mini golf places as we can right now. And I was like, oh, so you're doing what like adults do when they go to Myrtle Beach and they play a bunch of golf, except for you're doing mini golf in southwest Ohio.
That's not a bad little vacation. I like that idea.
Yeah, no, and you know, they've been hitting up the comic book stores and toy stores and antique stores that he and his girlfriend love to go to. So it's been fun getting the texts, you know, hey, I found this book. Oh, sweet. Grab it for me. So anyway, so since David is here and Johnny is not, we thought we would take the advantage to talk about The 100. We're going to talk about some other just kind of quick bite news things of things happening that, you know, we would be remiss not to talk about. But David got me hooked on the show. Johnny doesn't watch it. And the season 3 finale is tonight as of airing. You guys will be listening to this on Friday. So I'm sure we've watched it and loved it. And Clark did something amazing. But yeah. So, David, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right. So real quick. A bunch of stuff happened over the last 2 days in just kind of the comic book geek world. I guess more than 2 days. But one, the Game of Thrones episode from this past week was off the wall awesome. Shane Black had some interesting things to say about Iron Man 3 and who the villain should have been. And then DC Comics introduced a new logo. Yawn. And then DC Films is the new studio, I guess, if you will, from DC Entertainment. And they had a big executive shakeup. So we're going to talk about all that, and then we'll get into the 100. Okay, so Game of Thrones, real quick. I don't want to get too terribly spoilery because it was pretty awesome, and I feel like people should experience it. But the ladies came to play.
They did. It was an episode of reunions. We'll just say that, I guess.
That's a great way to put it. So Sansa and Jon Snow, for the first time since, you know, what, episode 2?
Yes.
We're together. And you're an avid book reader. I'm an avid book reader of the A Game of Ice and Fire. And these are two people who never really got along.
Yeah, they were, you know, I mean, we know that Jon Snow was close to Arya. You know, he gave Arya her beloved needle sword that we saw her burying last season. And, yeah, I mean, they weren't close, but you see that they're family. And that's all that counts, you know. I mean, in the end, it's just that they're family. And, you know, it was a really beautiful, touching moment. I know some people got some tears in their eyes. I know for me as a book reader, reading the books, you know, and this hasn't happened in the books yet. I assume that these kids are never going to see each other again, no matter what.
Yeah.
And it was just really nice, very unexpected. But a welcome surprise.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were thinking that they were going to miss each other, that Jon was going to ride off to Winterfell and Sansa was going to show up minutes later and be like, oh, hey, Jon Snow, he's gone. Yeah, we killed him too. Weird. I got to say, I really did like it. I feel like this was the first time we really got the payoff of like dark Sansa walking down the steps in the Vale with the dark hair and like that more regal attitude than she'd ever had before.
Yeah, much more. I felt this was much more organic. I felt like when we saw her with her Hunger Games outfit on that last time, she almost seemed a little comical. You know, she had that little smirk on her face, like that kind of evil look. But I think, like you said, Brian, I think you said it perfect, that she has that leadership look. She's tough. She's motivated. She even has more of a will to keep going than Jon. Granted, Jon was killed, so I can understand him not having the will to go on. But she's becoming a leader, and she's stepping up in a more organic way. I feel like she's finding her own outside of Littlefinger, outside of all those influences. She's just becoming who she's meant to be. I think she's going to be a very tough character from here on out.
I think so. And you know, Wardeness of the North has a nice ring to it for her.
Yes, it does.
I've been looking forward to the change that happened to her to take hold since the end of what, season 4?
Yeah.
You know, it was nice to see Littlefinger back in this episode. He had his own sort of reunion with the Lord of the Vale.
Aaron, which,
you know, that's just, I mean, it's comical. That kid was in something not too long ago. I just seem to remember that wasn't, or maybe I'm just, you know, all the British kids look alike.
Well, he is obsessed with throwing people out of that moon door. That's for sure.
Dude, he wanted to make the guy fly, and it was
make him fly.
that's not cool, man. You can't just make people fly. Like that's a big no-no. You will not be Lord of the Vale for long.
And he's not smart. That's the thing. He's not like, you know, we love to hate Ramsay. We love to hate Joffrey. But those guys, you know, they had some intelligence to them, some ruthlessness. This kid's just, he's just stupid. You can't take him seriously at all. I mean, he can't even shoot an arrow.
Yeah, the whole, you know, it falling short of the mark is, I think, the visual representation of who Robin Arryn really is.
Definitely.
All right. So there was that. And then Tyrion had probably one of my more favorite Tyrion moments in a long list of favorite Tyrion moments, dealing with the slavers.
Yeah.
And playing that political game that he's become so adept and so good at.
And also teaching, you know, with that skill, teaching Missandei and Grey Worm, because they see things, you know, very black and white, which makes sense. I mean, they were slaves for their whole lives, so of course they hate it. They want it gone immediately, but Tyrion agrees with them. But he says, look, you got to play politics. You know, you can't, I think he says a phrase, something like, you can't abolish war and slavery on the same day. You can't do both. You know, it takes time. It's a process. 7 years is an eternity, but it's the best he can do. So, I mean, it was a good episode. I thought Missandei and Grey Worm, Grey Worm never has much to say. He talks about going on patrol and what he does on patrol and what he sees on patrol. Mm-hmm. But I thought they both gave really good performances this week.
Yeah, it was cool. And then I did like how Missandei called him out for, you know, when he's like, well, you know, I know what it's like to be a slave. And she's like, how long were you a slave? And he was like, I don't know, like 7 days, you know. So that was just a really cool little moment there that you know, it put him in a different mindset, I felt, moving forward.
Yeah, I know we're on a different topic, but I was just going to say, I mean, probably the one of everybody's favorite scenes was probably, you know, Tormund looking at Brienne
this
week. Yeah, that was, I mean, that's has so many memes on Twitter I saw over the week.
We can call that a reunion of the heart, because they're soulmates, obviously, because, you know, she's been looking for, you know, she's not been looking for a man, but like her, you know, her dad, this is who would love to have Brienne as a wife. And, you know, and he would challenge her and he would make her better and she would make him better. And, you know, I totally like let's go ship her for a second. I totally I'm going to totally ship that relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot, Brian. It's Game of Thrones just creates that buzz that I don't think any other television show does. I mean, it is event TV, you know? I mean, even if you're not a fan, you've heard of it. People who don't even watch that much TV have heard of Game of Thrones. It's such an event that it's one of those shows that you almost feel like you have to watch Sunday nights, or else you have to stay offline. Like, you can't go online, you know, at least social media for a few days, because there are going to be instant recaps and instant spoilers. It's like a must-watch show. Because, you know, we have DVRs and we have Hulu and... Yeah. You know, you can take your time, you can watch, you can binge and watch as much as you want, but Game of Thrones still has that week-to-week feel event that you know, Orange is the New Black or House of Cards doesn't have.
No, I really equate it to the last two seasons of Breaking Bad. I feel like that was the last real appointment viewing thing that we've had. You know, prior to that, it was kind of traditional TV, because, like, Netflix is what really made Breaking Bad popular.
Yes.
You know, I think in the first couple seasons, it only averaged a few hundred thousand viewers. And then after, like, I know I'm one of these people who I was not early on the Breaking Bad train, but I got caught up. And by the time season 5 came around, I watched week to week.
Yeah, and I think the finale had like over like 10 million views or something, which is something crazy.
Crazy.
And they ended the show there, which is awesome. You know, you and I talk about a lot about shows going too long.
Yep.
And maybe they, and I love that Breaking Bad, even on its highest rated season, it could have easily been renewed, decided to end it, you know, and end it while you're on top.
And I think that comes from having like strong leadership in the show. And, you know, Game of Thrones definitely has that.
Yes, for sure.
All right. So then the last reunion would be Dany and Dario Naharis and Jorah Mormont.
Yes.
And all I'm going to say about this is I've always liked Dani, and I've always thought she was a great character with a lot of potential. I think Emily Clarke plays her, or is it Amelia?
Amelia Clarke, yeah.
Amelia Clarke plays her amazingly. This was a completely different level of acting, of character, of who this woman has become. And I'm so excited to see what happens next week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has so much confidence. And I think earlier on in her, I guess we'll call it her career, she seemed a little overzealous, a little too cocky at times, not understanding the nuances of situations, being like, you know, I'm just going to go back out west and I'm going to conquer. And people want a leader. And they're like, no, people just want food. They want a place to stay. They want security. They don't really care who's in the Iron Throne as long as the person who's there is keeping them safe. And that's all that really matters. They don't care about the Targaryen name. And I think she's understanding what it is to be a symbol.
Yeah. And now she's not just she's not just saying, oh, I'm the Targaryen name. She's like, I'm the leader. Who's going to lead the Dothraki? Me.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And if you haven't seen it yet, after you're done listening to this podcast and after you've gone and shared and liked and given us 5 stars on iTunes, make sure you go watch this episode because it was great. And another thing that you and I talk a lot about, and we can talk about this kind of, we will talk about this more with 100, is 10 episodes is perfect for this show. There's zero chance for filler. Everything they have to do has to move the story forward, and it's great.
That's what I'm always surprised when people say Game of Thrones, if an episode airs, like, oh, it's kind of slow this week. I'm like, Game of Thrones always pays off, and it's only 10 episodes. So I think they're allowed to go slow sometimes and just build character and build story because you know it's going to pay off in the end.
Right, right. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there's if it's slow, it's intentional.
Yes.
So, all right, so moving on. Iron Man 3, which has been panned as the worst Iron Man movie, even worse than Iron Man 2, I'll say, for a Lethal Weapon movie, I totally enjoyed it because it was pretty much Lethal Weapon 1 all over again with Shane Black, who was the director of both. But news came out this week that Iron Man 3's big bad villain was actually supposed to be a woman. And the reason that it wasn't a woman was perceived lack of toy sales.
That's important. You got to sell those toys. It's sad because I was reading the Shane Black. You know, Shane Black's advertising, or he's doing promotion for The Nice Guys, his new film with Russell Crowe.
Which I want to see.
Yeah, it's supposed to be great. I mean, it's getting a lot of rave reviews right now. And it's too bad, like, because Rebecca Hall was in Iron Man 3. And Rebecca Hall
she was supposed to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, she was great. I mean, she was good in The Town. Mm-hmm. She was good in The Prestige. You know, she's a very good actress.
She was in a movie, what's it called? It was with Jason Sudeikis. And her husband was like this one hit, like wonder, like hipster musical icon type guy who died. And she's never gotten over his death. And she was great in that. And you know, Jason, or not Jason Momoa, Joe Maglione.
Oh, from
Alcide. Yeah.
Yeah. Alcide from True Blood.
He was in it. It was a really good movie. And she is great. And I highly recommend it. And I will put it in the show notes of what it is because I cannot remember the name of it right now. Oh, Tumble Down. It was called Tumble Down.
I was going to say, it's just it's too bad that we didn't get that bad villain. I think it's getting better now. I mean, obviously Star Wars, which is part of Disney too, is coming out, and they have their two next movies have female leads in them, of course, and that's part of Disney. And you know that Kevin Feige has come out and said they are going to develop a Black Widow solo film, so we know that that is coming because obviously Star Wars is making tons of money with female leads. So,
And we've
known this for years that female leads can sell movies. It's just
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the solo projects that Scarlett Johansson has done outside of Marvel, she's a more bankable star than Chris Evans or Robert Downey Jr.
And especially Chris Hemsworth. He's not doing well at all.
I mean, like, I think Rush was a highly underrated movie, but I also think it's a hard sell for a 2.5 hour, you know, race car all based in Europe. You know, that was a hard sell. And I watched it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought he was great. I thought Baron Zemo was way better.
Daniel Brühl is such a good actor. I mean, ever since I saw him in Inglourious Basterds.
He was great in that. I think the problem with Hemsworth is he gets overshadowed really easily because he's not the best actor in the world. You know, he's a great Thor, but when you put him next to someone like Downey Jr. or, you know, even Chris Evans, who I think has matured greatly as an actor as he's gotten older, he definitely gets overshadowed, and that affects him outside of the Marvel universe greatly.
Yeah, I hope he gets another chance, you know, because I think he has a lot of charisma, a lot of presence on. Not just because he's a good looking 6'4",
right,
you know, Viking god, but because I think he's one of those guys I think he just needs the right film. Some people just need the right movie. I remember when Channing Tatum first came out, I didn't like him at all, but yeah. I think when he gets in the right roles, like a 21
Jump Street,
he's fantastic. So I think maybe he just needs the right role. Yeah.
I did really like Chris Hemsworth in the Vacation movie with Ed Helms.
Okay.
He was actually really good in that. It's on HBO, so you can go watch it whenever. But yeah, no, just kind of back to the main point. It's really disappointing because I would like to have seen what Shane Black did, especially if it was going to be Rebecca Hall, because if anybody's ripe for a female villain, it's womanizer Tony Stark.
Yes,
and
definitely.
If they're going to do an Iron Man 4, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow is already kind of unlikable. Make her the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Pepper knows everything about him. She can, you know, she can be the next Madam Mask or whatever, because Whitney Frost was already used in Agent Carter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing we have to figure out is if Gwyneth Paltrow was ever going to come back. I mean, we hear, like, you know, behind the scenes difficulty on set, contract disputes. It seems like they really had to kind of find ways to talk about why she wasn't there, in Civil War. So I hope they figure that out, because I think, you know, they have great chemistry together on screen. So I hope they figure that out.
Yeah, I do too, because she's been great in the Pepper Potts role.
Yeah.
All right. So moving now to the other side with DC Comics, they introduced a new logo this week as Rebirth is upon us. Rebirth Zero comes out in a couple weeks. This logo is not great. It's very plain. I think it was an overcorrection of what they did with the current, like, DC flipping page looking logo. But what are your thoughts?
It's kind of harkening back to, it's an old school look. It's very, very minimal look. I guess logos don't really do it for me one way or the other. It depends on the look. Obviously, like Nike and those big brands, like Puma, I mean, they have kind of, you know, iconic looks. But
Puma.
I know Puma. I went from Nike to Puma.
Where did Puma come from?
I know. I've been watching a lot of soccer, European football lately, so I think that's why Puma came into
play. Okay. Fair enough.
And my sneakers are Puma.
Umbro. Nike and Umbro.
Who else? Adiadora, all those like random companies.
Mizuno.
But no, I think you know how it is. It boils down to stories, and if the stories are good, then you and I are going to buy those issues.
Well, here's the problem though: is they keep relaunching and quote unquote reinventing things, and they're not telling good stories. And when this came out, I have a Facebook friend who tags me in all sorts of things, and I typically just ignore it. Sometimes I add it to my timeline, sometimes I don't. But for this one, I had to leave a comment because I am a marketing nerd. I do marketing in my real life. When I saw this, all I could think of was Pepsi, because Pepsi has, over the last 50 plus years, Pepsi's changed their logo probably 18 to 20 times, whereas Coke has changed their logo in the past 100 years, maybe a total of 10. And when they do, it's all minor. And looking back, I went and I looked up some of the old Marvel logos. And Marvel doesn't really change their logo a whole lot either. And I think it's a different, like, field and everything, but DC is trying to play catch up, and they're doing whatever they can. And Marvel keeps grabbing more and more market share in the comics. Image is moving up on DC, Dark Horse is moving up on DC, and then you have the cinematic universe where DC's getting crushed. And, you know, so it's one of those things where it's like, okay, When is enough going to be enough? When are you going to focus on the things that are important?
Well, I think these new moves are trying to do that. I mean, we'll see. It's next week, right? Next week we get the first Rebirth issue from Geoff Johns, like an 80-page issue. And we'll see. I mean, they've shortened their the amount of stories. I think they're going like in the 20s somewhere, I want to say, like 22, 24, like basically whatever half of 52 is, 26, something like that.
I think it's even lower than that.
Maybe lower than that.
It's somewhere between 17 and 22. So,
which is good. So maybe they can start small and build from there, but start small. You know how it is. We talk about sports. You know, let's get back to the fundamentals. Get back to the basics. Yeah. Let's just tell a good story. And I think with this news, and not to go too far ahead, I know that's our next topic, but the appointment of Geoff Johns.
Let's just segue right into it because it's natural. So
yeah, so like now that Geoff Johns, who's not, he is kind of the Kevin Feige, but he's kind of also, he's a co-chief, so he's not alone in this, overseeing. I guess, you know, and we were talking about this before, Brian, is I assumed that Geoff Johns had way more say in the films, or at least a voice in the films, than he originally did. I guess he was just basically in charge of the television portion of things. Right. And now they're giving him a bump, making him a bigger executive now, and giving him a Kevin Feige role as being in charge of the films, co-writing Batman with Ben Affleck. I think this can be, I mean, DC, I don't want to say I hate saying that they're rock bottom, because making $850 million, even though that's considered kind of a failure, it's still not rock bottom. They're not making the worst movies ever. I still think Batman v Superman is better than the last Transformers film, which made more money. So, I mean, they're not rock bottom, but they do need to get better. So I don't think they're going to get worse. I think with Geoff Johns at the helm, especially working with Ben Affleck, who's executive producer now, Ben Affleck's passionate. We saw the articles. He was really hurt by the reaction to Batman v Superman. He wants this universe to get better, and he's a very talented director. I think that it's going to get better. I don't think it's going to get worse. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right, Brian? We'll see what happens in the next couple of years, but I'm really excited to see the next Batman film, the first new Batman film.
I think, unfortunately, the timing of this is with the Suicide Squad coming out. I mean, honestly, how much faith do you have in a movie that you put in August? I mean, Marvel didn't have faith in Guardians. That's why it came out in August. So, you know, it's one of those things. But I think they're either going to get way too much credit for the success of Suicide Squad, which I'm hoping for, or they're going to catch way too much blame for something that they weren't really involved with. So that concerns me. I think the number one thing this group needs to do, or this pairing needs to do, is they need to get Zack Snyder out of there. They're only a few weeks into shooting. Just bite the bullet, spend the money, get a new director, someone who you know, has a better grasp on storytelling when it's not directly adapted from something else.
Yeah, I feel like, I really feel like hurt DC. It's not his fault. I feel like Christopher Nolan kind of hurt the DC universe, and that it's not, now granted, he made a very good trilogy. Batman Dark Knight Rises wasn't the best of them, but it was still entertaining,
I'll argue that he made a very good trilogy. He made a really good movie and a half, and then made two really bad movie and a half.
Right. So. And what he did is he set this tone that I feel like DC feels like they have to follow, and even the color palette. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Marvel, now granted, Marvel still follows a similar color palette. Like Avengers looks a lot like Civil War, except for Guardians, you know, I think is the most unique of the films because the color palette's different. They really let Gunn go with it and do his own thing. I feel like they give the directors a little bit more freedom, whereas I feel like all the DC guys have been locked into this Christopher Nolan universe. Yeah, Nolan. That's why I have a little bit of hope for Suicide Squad because of the color, because it doesn't look like Batman v Superman. It looks, even though it's villains, it's a dark, it looks brighter. Well, it looks more colorful.
I know just from my experience with David Ayer, is End of Watch is a fantastically awesome movie. Mm. And it's a great story, and it's one that's kind of all over the place, but like gets you there in the end. And it looks like this is what's gonna happen. I'm going into Suicide Squad hopeful. Like, I've liked what I've seen. The only worry I've really had about this is we've seen, three or four different trailers now, and it's all been for three or four different movies.
Right, and now they're doing reshoots because they want more Batman in it.
Right. Ben Affleck as Batman was one of the best parts, if not the best part, of Batman versus Superman.
Yes, agreed.
I think they made a mistake making him older at the end of his career. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he should have been, maybe a 5-year-old Batman, not a 5-year-old child as Batman, but like Batman should have been around 5.
Sure.
And then they could buy, or even, even if it's 10, like then you can buy, he's had two Robins and one got killed, the first year out. Yeah. I'm interested to see what happens. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be on the rise. And I don't know, but I can't speak for the comics. But like you said, I hope Geoff Johns just doesn't try to overtax himself. I hope he has a nice balance.
He is not a man who does well when he does too many things at one time.
Yes.
So, all right. So, real quick, Game of Thrones, awesome. Check out season 6, episode 4. I forget the title of it now, but I'm sure it's something to do with.
It is called Book of the Stranger.
There you go. Book of the Stranger. Oh, which makes sense because of Marjorie's talk with the Sparrow, the High Sparrow.
Yep.
All right. Iron Man 3. I'll put a link to the source where I found about Shane Black's talk. DC Comics, new logo. Weigh in. Let us know what you think. And then DC Films. Is it too little, too late? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Yeah, I hope not. I really hope not. I hope it wasn't too little, too late. You know, Brian, like trends in movies change, right?
Right.
Remember, like back in the '90s, late '90s, it was all the disaster films, like Twister and Deep Impact and Armageddon. It was all these like kind of earth-ending, you know, 2012.
Finger of God, those, man.
Yeah, Finger. I mean, I love that movie. They had Bill Paxton and Philip Seymour Hoffman in the same movies.
And Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt, that was a stacked cast.
In 1998, that was a stacked cast.
It's a stacked cast. So, I mean, this trend, I think, will end at some point, but it's still very financially viable.
It is.
So I think it's going to be around for at least another, I would think, 8 to 10 years.
I mean, $800 million is nothing that a studio should sneeze at, you know. But
I know they were hoping for $1 billion, but, I mean, it's not the end of the world for DC.
No. No, you know, and it'll get there with DVD sales and stuff like that. But all right, let's talk about something on a brighter note. The end of the world.
Yes, yeah. Post-apocalyptic society.
So, I think you're like me where, like, this post-apocalyptic stuff, I just can't get enough of it. I love it. And I always have, you know, the whole dystopian future thing. You know, I think when I saw the movie Metropolis as a kid, it's what really was one of the first things that got me into that. You got me hooked on this show. I mean, you were like, you got to check it out. It's this, it's that. I'm like, it's a YA. And I think I was just being stubborn because I liked the Tomorrow People.
Mm-hmm.
And it got picked up instead of. And I was like, you know, I thought Robbie Amell was really cool in that role. And the guy that was John was awesome. And it had Mark Pellegrino. So, you know, I was like, oh, sweet. This show's got a bunch of actors I like. Let's give it a shot. And then you're like, no, give it a shot. And I think when it hit Netflix is when I first watched the first season. And I binged through in about 2 days, maybe three. Because I used to work from home. So I just watched stuff and that. And then I think season two was already like partway through. So I had to go buy the episodes on iTunes to get caught up because Hulu only keeps the last five.
Right.
And then I've been week to week ever since.
Yeah. It's a show you don't see coming. You know, I always tell people, I'm like, give it a few episodes because the first two are really rough. And even the creators have admitted that. Kind of like Brian, you and I have talked about Spartacus. You know, so, I mean, if you tweeted Steven tonight right now and said, hey, how were the first couple episodes of Spartacus, he would admit that they're rough.
He's going to say brutal.
brutal. I mean, he admits it, you know, and some shows just take a little time to catch their footing, and the show does it, but does it quickly.
I don't think you can judge shows by their pilot. I really don't.
You got to give it at least two or three episodes.
I like three, and something big happened in the third episode of this series where it immediately became the bravest show on television, even braver than Game of Thrones. At no point watching this show do I ever feel like anyone is safe.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, especially this season, there's been, of course, we won't spoil anything, but yeah, this season has been, I mean, for lack of a better word, just intense. Every single scene, I'm just like, what's going to happen? Who's going to die? Or who's going to be in trouble? Or who's going to have to, you know, basically just sacrifice their sense of morality, or, you know,
a loved one,
themselves,
right? You know,
how is that going to affect them down the road? And it's the one CW, and I hate to put CW into one category because they just had their, you know, all the studios are having their upfronts right now,
right?
Where they talk to the, where they basically showcase all their new shows for the advertisers
and all the returning shows.
They've
been all live on Facebook all day,
right? Yeah. So I mean, a lot of new trailers, and CW was talking about their lineup today with Mr. Pedowitz, who's the head of the CW. And but a lot of the CW shows have that soapy feel. They have that kind of soap opera look. Like whenever you know, you have like Barry Allen talking to Iris West in their house, it has that kind of the screen has that glow to it.
Right.
You know, that kind of, and granted, it's not post-apocalyptic, so it shouldn't be dark. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like The 100, besides all the beautiful 25-something-year-old kids on the show, I feel like it looks like it could exist in the real world if something like this were to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have that glow to it. It doesn't feel like a soap opera, even with the relationships. Relationships have consequences. If something goes wrong, it really goes wrong.
Right, right.
It's not. It takes itself seriously, but not in a way where it seems pretentious. It seems very honest about what it's trying to do. And I don't know. That's why I really just love this show.
I think
that show's on TV.
And I think the reason that happens is because it's got a great mix of young actors and experienced actors. Like Paige Turco, who, you know, is just, she was the second April O'Neil in the Ninja Turtle movies.
That's
That's like where I know her from. And like to see her as Abby, like who is this strong, just kick-ass woman who is, you know, she's a doctor above all, and you know, she takes her Hippocratic oath very, very seriously, and to watch and to have her lead, you know, the same with Henry Ian Cusack from Lost, who was what was his name on Lost?
My Lost knowledge is
I just
strong.
Had a brain fart anyway,
but Randy Bryan, I just want to tell you something real quick to throw you off, but do you know who Paige Turco's husband is?
No.
It's Jason O'Mara, the current Batman in the animated movies, who you and I know you and I aren't really a big fan of his Batman.
Especially because, like, I mean, first off, Kevin Conroy is the one true Batman. And then Bruce Greenwood killed it in those two movies that he did and on Young Justice. But, yeah, Jason O'Mara is just not.
Paige is married to Batman.
Yeah. That's all right. She's still awesome.
Yes, she is.
And, you know, I mean, Jason O'Mara has definitely gotten better in that role. And maybe that's something you can come back
and he's a good actor. I like later. Jason O'Mara.
Yeah, he's a good actor for sure. But so it's got this great mix of young and old actors. The production quality is next level for CW for sure. But I think the more important thing is this is a case study for why shows should only be 13 to 14 episodes. Even with the 16 in this case, there's probably a couple they could have gotten rid of this season and gotten to where they needed to a little bit faster.
I agree. I think we're so used to in the States, you know, 22, 23 episodes. I mean, look at The Flash and Arrow. I mean, next week will be the 23rd episode. We've been watching these shows since October.
I know.
It's been 7 months.
It's like the NBA playoffs. It's like 19,000 months long, and it never ends.
It just keeps going.
And we get 12 weeks off, and we're right back at it, you know?
Yeah, and the network, the way it's structured, to take these long breaks. The nice thing with The 100, like you said, is it's a mid-season show.
Right.
So there are a few breaks, pauses here and there, but nothing.
It's never more than a week.
Right. I don't feel like I'm running a marathon. This feels more like a sprint, but a very good sprint. It's really
like the 400-meter dash.
Exactly. That's a good way to describe it, yeah.
You know, like the 800, it's all out for half a mile. It's a little bit long, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know a show that would compare to this. But, like, Justified was, like, the 800-meter dash. Right?
Yeah, like 13 episodes, yeah.
So this one, even at 16, is definitely like the 400 because they are on their toes sprinting the entire time.
And, yeah, there's always something at stake every episode.
And because it's such high stakes, when you get that lull, like, I don't know about you, but I get nervous, especially for the characters I like best. Because I am a fan of doomed characters, books, and TV shows. It just tends to happen. You know, the characters I love best are always the ones who are first killed.
Yeah, I know.
So.
And I think, too, it's great that this is on a network like the CW. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Pedowitz, who's been, I think, ahead of the CW right now since 2011, has had faith in this. You know, imagine if this was on Fox, CBS, NBC. God. First of all, it would have never aired on them. Maybe Fox.
It would have been like that show, what was it, Revolution, where the power went out on NBC. That's
another thing, too.
Or the Cape.
Remember Revolution? It had like all these people had like this perfect hair. These people looked really good. I mean, granted, this is a CW, so all the people on the show are very good looking, but at least they look dirty.
So
they look like they have dirt on them.
Eliza Taylor, who plays Clark, right,
mm-hmm.
is always dirty.
Like, always dirty.
Even after she takes a bath, she comes out, she still has dirt all over her.
Right.
You know, they're very sweaty. They have scars. I mean, she's got that big scar on her cheek after the little stabby stabby thing that happened this week. You know they're gonna have those two little scars right below her collarbones. I just wanted to highlight Eliza Taylor is amazing. I don't know what she was in before. I haven't even bothered to look because I only want to see her as Clark.
Yeah, I mean, her, I don't recognize a lot of stuff. I'm looking at it that she's been in. She's in The November Man with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah, that's
Pierce Brosnan. And she's from Australia, so I'm sure she's probably been in some Australian things that we're not familiar with. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think she could be, after this, a star. I mean, she has that presence, you know. She has a pretty good American accent. I was surprised when I first heard her speak her Australian accent.
A lot of times, those the British and Australian actresses have a hard time emoting with the American accent. I think it's what got the Bionic Woman into trouble back in the day.
Bob Morley as Bellamy. He's Australian too.
Is he really?
He's Australian. Wow. Yeah. It's just incredible. He does a great job too.
He might be my favorite character right now because all he does is make stupid decisions and then have to make up for them. Just when you think he's learned his lesson, he makes another stupid decision.
And it's painful to watch, but it's also fun to watch too. Him just try to crawl back into, you know.
Oh, yeah. My favorite is his sister Octavia. She's my favorite character on the show.
She's tough.
Because of what she from where she came as that spoiled little stuck living under the floorboards of their cabin on the Ark to, you know, grounder sympathizer, second in command of one of the crews to, you know, just all around amazing badass of a character.
Right.
So it had a pretty great cast too, right from the get go. I mean, like Kelly Hu was on the first season.
That's right.
You know, Isaiah Washington, who, you know, got kicked off of Grey's Anatomy and was essentially a pariah in Hollywood, who has been nothing but awesome as Jaha on this show. And, you know, at first you think he's this like savior of a person, and then he's, you know, anything but.
I'm also a really big fan of Richard Harmon as John Murphy.
Yep.
He's one of those characters that you just love to watch because you're never really sure what he's going to do, you know?
I think that goes back into it being the bravest show on television, and Murphy's part of the reason for that because his soul, I guess motivation would be the word I would use, is himself, is his own survival.
Sure.
And you can bet that if there's something that's going to happen and he has a chance to stab you in the back, he's going to do it. And they consistently fall for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a character who, in the beginning, he was clearly like, you know, because the first couple episodes, it feels like Lord of the Flies, right? Kids are on an island or on some location. They have
to understand. It very much was, though, because they had lived in. So, actually, you know, we didn't even set this up.
Oh, yeah. We haven't really described what the show is.
Okay. We just kind of. Right. We love
like,
it
wow,
so
what
much.
Is this show? Who are these people?
Okay. So, it's basically two or 300 years in the future. There's been a nuclear holocaust, and there were about 2,000 people living in space on various space stations at the time. They kind of. With duct tape and bubble gum, stuck all these together. It became a generational ship called the Ark. And as they're running out of resources after a couple hundred years, they need to see if the ground is habitable again. One of the things, though, that happens on the Ark is if you commit a crime, they float you, which is they open an airlock and they're like, peace out, enjoy space, without a spacesuit. But if you're under 18, they, you know, keep you in the box or something like that.
Yeah.
Basically, it's jail. So they get to a point where they have about 100 of these kids, and they say, hey, you know what? You are going to die when you're 18 anyway. Let's just send you down and see what happens. And then it sounds like such a stupid premise, you know?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it totally works.
And it became something so much better.
Yes, yes.
So season one is all about finding out that they're not alone, which was great, especially for how it ended with, you know, everyone eventually ending up and how they end up there. Season two, they find that there are, I guess I would call them like standard survivors who haven't been living out in the wilderness for hundreds of years. And you know, they're the group, it's called Mount Weather, and they're called Mountain Men, who, unlike everybody else in the world, are not immune to the radiation that is still living on the planet. And this is where we find that the space the space babies, the or as you like to call them, the Battlestar babies, over time are now immune to most forms of radiation because of living in space. If only Reed Richards could have had that kind of shielding, you know, there would have been no Fantastic Four. But season two is all about, you know, what it's like to now live among these people and be a part and, you know, fight for what's yours. And season three has been all about inclusion and, you know, not just becoming a part, but like planning and strategy and how to be a part of this. But then there's this whole futuristic AI thing that comes into play, which first off, I didn't see coming the way they did it.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It was unexpected.
It was completely unexpected. And then secondly, Erica Sierra from Eureka is just amazingly beautiful and is great as Allie.
Yeah, I mean, some people are like, I'd probably follow her. She's pretty charismatic.
She's pretty. She wears a red dress.
Yeah, I mean, if she was inside my head, I'd follow her. I'd go to her utopia that she keeps promising.
The City of Light, man. The City of Light.
Who wouldn't want to live?
You know, another, yeah, I don't know. I certainly would. Sometimes I'm like, give me, just chip me. I'm good. Chip me. I've had enough. I'll just do whatever you tell me to do. The other really interesting thing is everyone always talks about diversity in movies and in television and things like that. And there, the show does not get enough credit for being probably the most diverse show on TV. There is every race that you can think of. They have represented, and it's not like shoehorned in. It's not like the token Asian kid or token black kid or token, you know, Irish guy. You know, everyone serves a purpose, and you know, it's great. And then the whole LGBT part of it, you know, there are gay characters who are not just gay for the sake of being gay. They're, you know, strong. They're leaders. They are, you know, the people that we love. And when they are, you know, when any of these people are killed off, you feel it, and it's sad.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I agree with you completely, Brian. Like you said, just so much diversity and just so much care goes into each of the characters. Like you said, like, I guess I'm just repeating exactly what you said, but they don't feel shoehorned. They don't feel like they're there just to serve a certain purpose. Like, every character, no matter how long they're on the show or for how long of a time, they just feel important.
Yeah.
They feel necessary. And I think that not every show does that.
I mean, even Monty's little girlfriend here at the end, like, she's important. Like, they introduce her as this girl who is just, you know, his friend and, you know, someone he has feelings for, and then it turns out, like, you know, she's a big MacGuffin for what's happening with him and Raven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And then we can tell that it's a talented group, because the characters that, you know, I won't mention any of them because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, but some of the characters that aren't on the show anymore are moving on to better things.
Yeah.
They'll go on to bigger shows.
And, you know, there's that. And then the characters who aren't with us anymore, this is a show that does not forget its past.
No.
There's a character who dies. Was he season one or two?
It was season two.
Season two. That you don't expect. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, he's going to get out of this. And he doesn't, and he is still very much a part of the show. There was a point where he came back for a little bit, where he was a ghost in someone's head, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, he was mentioned just a couple episodes ago. A lot of shows, they kill a character off and they forget about it.
Yeah.
And this one, it recognizes its history, and that I think really has to go to Jason Rothenberg, who is the showrunner and executive producer who developed the book, The 100, that's by Cass Morgan. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of credit has to go to Cass Morgan first for coming up with this idea, but then Jason Rothenberg, ran with it and has turned it into this thing that, like, you know, as we were planning for this show, I kind of hope next season's is the last season.
Yeah, I agree. I hope, I don't want to see them again, like we talked about, go too long. Right. I don't want to see them just go too far and just kind of wear themselves out and get to a point where the creativity isn't what it used to be. And, you know, too many shows do that. I hope they go out strong. I want to see them, you know, go out like Breaking Bad, go out on top.
Yeah. Like, I would like to see, like, Flash become like a mid-season replacement show, 13 episodes. And that show could go on for 15 years like that, you know?
I hope so. I think it's a little too successful, but I agree.
Right. I'm just not saying that that's what's going to happen, but I'm like, you know, if they had thought, or if TV would change, you know, this is what would happen. But this show, I feel like one more just awesome, just end, you know, and, yeah. And it can be, you know, this is one of those shows where it could be everybody dies, like yeah. everybody. And I would be okay with that if there's no survivors.
Yeah, because it's a really hard show to see happy endings coming yeah. out of this, you know, but not like we're at the point where it's like Walking Dead where it's going to just last forever. You right, know, like eventually right. they're going to run out of time or run out of options or they're going to just blow each other up. Something's going to happen. And I think you're right. I don't think it's going to be on much more than a couple of years, yeah. if that.
I think 4 is the perfect run for this. I know, mm-hmm. Like, it used to be you had to get to like 5 seasons and like 100 episodes for syndication. But right. that doesn't matter anymore with Netflix because I know this show does well. As soon as it hits Netflix, it's on Instant Watchers top, you know, 10 for weeks after it hits, you know, with a new season.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those shows that I think people want to see and people are curious about because it is getting a lot of positive word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why, you know, Mr. Predowitz has, you know, kept it going. You know, yeah, he's going to give it another. I mean, he basically renewed all of his shows except for Containment. But
which yeah. I didn't watch, so I can't speak to it. But I will say this, though. I'm really excited about the finale tonight.
I am. It's tonight. I mean, so. It's crazy. I was counting today how many shows are ending that I'm watching right now. So this week alone, we have Legends of Tomorrow tonight, the mm-hmm. finale. We have 100 finale tonight. Next week, we have Flash and Arrow are ending.
Right.
So many shows. We have Preacher coming on. That's Shield. A new show coming out. Yeah. Shield
ending. Ended already.
There's a lot of shows. I think there's about 6 shows I'm getting off my plate right now, which is kind of a nice feeling because there's just so much TV to watch.
It is,
so
right.
That'll free up some time for me to maybe do some binging on some shows. I'm behind on The Americans and some other shows I really want to get back into. So.
Yeah, so this summer I'm going to start The Americans because it's on Amazon.
I can tell you it's really good. I'm about halfway through season 2. It's very good.
I'm going to start Hannibal because I haven't watched any of Hannibal yet.
That's another one. I've only seen the first season.
One. Both of which are now streaming on Amazon. All right, so real quick, just... non-spoilery. Can we do non-spoiler predictions for the finale? Or will we have to spoil it?
I think you almost have to
all right,
spoil
let's
it.
Let's do this. Let's do, like... So David's on TV Talk on Collider Video. Imagine the big red spoiler bar right now.
Yeah. Okay,
so there's a big red spoiler bar.
Spoiler bar is up.
Okay. I don't think Clark makes it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I'll tell you why. She's going to try and use the fire.
Uh-huh.
And she's going to become a part of the fire. So she will be dead, but she will be part of whoever is leading the next commander.
Oh, I see. I see.
That's my thought. Like she will be like the alley role for season 4.
So we'll still see her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just my thought. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be true or not,
mm-hmm.
but I get the feeling. And I will say this. The fact that she did not break when Allie had Abby stand up and hang herself.
Yeah, that was rough.
Was amazing. It was so cool because it's like that is how that character would act. Thank you for doing that.
I think for me, I'm going to go with Octavia on the chopping block because I feel like she seems lost. You know, she's stuck between two realities after.
Well, without Lincoln and everything.
Without Lincoln, Mr. Ricky Whittle, who's going to be on American Gods on Stars and Neil Gaiman's book. Looking forward to that. I feel like she's stuck between, she's not a grounder
mm-hmm.
and she's not really a Sky Crew.
Right.
And if she doesn't find a sense of identity, I feel like her character could be gone. I feel like she might be, she might sacrifice herself or do something. And I don't know. We'll see.
How cool would it be if she turned out to be like a Nightblood or something like that? I know she's bled before, but she would be a great commander.
She would. Yeah, she's tough. And she understands both cultures really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun.
So, all right, guys. So the 100 airs on the CW on Thursday nights at, is it 9 o'clock? Yeah, 9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock.
Because Legends of Mars. Yeah, 9. You can catch the first 2 seasons on... Netflix. It streams on Hulu, so if you missed, you can at least catch up on the last 5. But I highly recommend going back and watching from the beginning. I've actually watched the first 2 seasons through twice.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's insanely rewatchable. I didn't think it would be, but it is really fun to watch the second time, especially when you know it's going to happen because you can pick up on other little cues.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Very good. Yeah, definitely watch it. Please watch the show.
Awesome. All right. So, this has been the Infamous Podcast. You can find us online at infamouspodcast.com. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Infamous Podcast. It's really simple. Tried to keep it easy for you guys. I'm Brian Tudor. I'm at Brian Tudor on Twitter. And where are you?
I'm David Griffin. I am online as well. You can find me on Twitter at GriffinDE. Also, you know, check out on Collider Video on YouTube. Check out TV Talk. It's a TV talk show we do every week. There's four of us. We do it every week on Mondays. Look for that. Or usually it's probably around, say, East Coast time. I would say usually up by about 8 o'clock at night every Monday. Check that out. And also on YouTube at Think Hero Pro. We're doing weekly reviews of Game of Thrones. We just put up a review for Uncharted 4, the new PlayStation 4 video game. That is excellent. So, just look for that.
Yeah, we'll have to do an origin story for you and I for how we met one of these days. Next time you're a guest, like really kind of share how this friendship came to be, because it's a fun story.
Brian and David, issue number one.
Issue zero.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got zero. Then
you got the zero issue.
We could do a one half.
How about that?
You gotta milk it.
But all right, man. Hey, thanks for filling in while Johnny's off doing his mini golf, trying to get his mini golf tour card, apparently.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to hear some stories from that.
Yeah. And he's at Johnny Podorf everywhere. So definitely check him out. He's always post. Actually, go follow him on Instagram because he's going to post everything he bought this week, and it's always fun to watch.
I'm going to do that myself.
So, all right. You got off of Instagram.
I've never been on Instagram.
Oh, that's right. So I'm really bummed you're not on Facebook anymore, because I used to like to message you, and I hate direct messages on Twitter. So I text you all the time. So, exactly. All right. So anyway, thank you guys. Make sure if you enjoyed what you heard today, go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. We are on the Google Podcast thing. That's part of Google Play now. Give the show 5 stars, leave a review, tell us what you like. Tell David that you miss the beard and that you would like him to grow it back out. And yeah, make sure you check out David on Collider. TV Talk is great. It's him. It's really pretty girl named Sinead, who I kind of have a little crush on. This guy named Josh, who cracks me up because he doesn't actually watch TV, I have a feeling. And then Sasha, who, like, sorry, David, she's my favorite character on TV Talk.
She's a character, all right.
She's hilarious. I kind of want to make her some shirts because of all the crazy stuff that she comes up with. So
she's a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. So with that being said, this has been episode 44 of the Infamous Podcast. Everybody have a great day, night, weekend, week, morning, whatever. Whenever you listen to this nonsense, have fun, and we will talk to you soon.